Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to the Secrets to Mindful Health, where we explore the hidden truths of wellness in all its forms. From physical and mental health to spirituality, join me, your host, Beth Warren, at Nourished by Beth on Instagram and TikTok, registered dietitian for over a decade and single mom of six, as I share my personal journey overcoming challenges towards self-love and wellness. Together with my guests, we will inspire and motivate you to prioritize your well-being and create a life of balance and fulfillment. Let's embark on a transformative journey towards a healthier, happier you. I'm glad you're here. In this episode, Pause and Transform, Navigating Reactivity, featuring Adam Mordechai Klasner, a personal growth facilitator, we discuss the concepts of reactivity in personal growth and wellness. Adam will share his expertise in healing and practical tools for managing reactivity and highlighting the importance of self-compassion in fostering better communication and relationships. Keep listening for insights on shifting from reactive to proactive mindsets and the journey of healing and connection. Adam Mordechai Klasner is a respected personal growth facilitator dedicated to empowering individuals and nurturing meaningful relationships. He skillfully integrates modalities like breathwork, NLP, family constellations, and Imago facilitation to guide clients in transforming their reactivity into self-awareness and connection. Happily married and a proud parent of nine, Adam values the balance between personal and professional life. He brings joy to his journey through playful games of tag, lively dancing, and a zest for life. I want to be a part of that family. Welcome, Adam.
It's a little bit outdated. It's 10 kids at this point.
Wow. Yes, we have to update that. Wow. Oh, that's so beautiful.
It's a newborn in the last 9 weeks, so...
Very new. Okay, so You're super busy. I think this episode then would be for you too. I can't wait to get into it with you because we are going to talk about reactivity and the power of the pause. First, let's actually take a step back. Let's hear a little bit more about your journey. What brought you into the path of healing for others?
My journey can go back as far as I want it to go, or I could start in the middle. But what got me going to start doing, let's call it work on myself, is I was in a very difficult situation as a married man with a bunch of kids, and not just a bunch of kids, but some kids that my wife came into the marriage with. So learning how to be a father of kids that weren't biologically mine, which now there's a nice blended, integrated experience, but feeling a lot of the challenge there. And that's really where I guess you could say at a certain point in time, you're doing work or you're living life until you can't live life anymore because you feel stuck and you need to make some sort of movement. And that's where I felt really stuck. And God had many messengers, lots of different good friends who told me that I should go and do some work on myself. And I was 29 years old, which was 12 years ago. And that's where I went on my first men's workshop and started exploring a different side of me that I had buried for many years. And that had started the whole process of, I guess maybe you would call it my passion. Some people would say it addiction because I'm really into it, but never ending seeking, searching for myself.
Was it something that felt like an instinctive part of you when you went into it? It just was a snap, or did it take time to develop?
So it was a very intense weekend. I went, it was a workshop, a Jewish men's workshop called Call the Shofar. It was getting a lot of traction at the time, many years ago. And a lot of my friends had gone. And after that intensive weekend, like so many things started clicking together. I didn't have full clarity, but it's interesting because we just ran our 75th workshop.
Wow.
This past weekend. And one of the things that the guys come with when they come on a workshop is they're like, okay, here's all my problems. Now, how do I solve them? And what you'll find is you're not actually coming to a place of working on yourself to solve your problems, but rather what you're doing is you're coming back into alignment with who you are to be able to face your problems, to be able to step in and work with your struggles and challenges. There is no magic pill. There is no shortcut. It's an alignment process. So when I'm connected to myself, which when I'm feeling stuck, I'm not connected to myself. I don't see resources. I don't see possibility. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. All I see is the problem. And that means that at that point in time, my problem seems like it's bigger than who I am. And if I could bring myself back into alignment, which maybe we can get into that discussion soon, then I could be able to show up to my problems with a sense of clarity, with a sense of willingness to take on the challenge of what's in front of me.
Yes, I was waiting for you to get to that word clarity, because when you said the goal is really to find your sense of alignment, I felt, because then what opens up for you is clarity. No, and that answers is an irrelevant point. It becomes irrelevant, the answer.
Absolutely.
It's so cool. So I know we had to hone in because we could talk about this topic forever. And we were back and forth for a few weeks about what specifically should we talk about. But I want to talk about, I already said, the reactivity and the power of the pause. And I just want to explain even to you where that came from for me. Because then you even told me, be more specific, Beth, be more specific, Beth. And that to me is the concept of editing. And I'm not, I'm a very loquacious 4-minute voice note, oh, you probably got some of them, you know, type of girl. So for me to edit down is an exciting challenge for me, because that also helps refocus us more inward, more in, you know, get more clear, be more specific, get more pointed at to exactly what you want to hit. So I loved the challenge. So within the reactivity of the pause, my goals currently in my self-work have been about reactivity and the pause in every area of my life, because it bleeds, but with my children. And specifically because over the past 5 years, since I've gotten separated and divorced with 6 kids, I gave myself, understandably, a lot of grace and kindness. I learned how to rebuild myself with self-love, compassion, give myself a lot of understanding. You know, you're going through a lot, like try to understand myself from that respect. And that was very important. It still is important. And it doesn't mean that's going to disappear in this work. But I was recently reflecting over how I was acting with my children. This is my right now closest relationships, right? I don't have a partner. I don't have any man in my life. My children are my partners in a sense, which could be good or bad, you can tell me, meaning I was putting a lot on them, you know, like I was sort of leaning on them for support or emotional regulation and that was sneaky, because I'm doing all this self-work and yet I'm finding, wait a second, like, why am I like pouring my heart out to my 17-year-old about like, mommy's so tired and like, why can't I just, you know, have a minute, when it's like, because they have their needs and you need to show up a certain way for your kids. So my point is that, yes, self-love, compassion, I'm going through a lot.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
I'm a single mom. I have to work. I don't have live-in help anymore, this and that. But at the same time, I got to show up my best self for my kids. I can't keep, I feel they're starting to shift into excuses. I feel they're starting to give me a little bit of like a crutch of, you don't have to really push yourself to do better, because give yourself all this, like, you're doing great, but really in the reactivity and the, there's elements there that I could work on.
Okay.
That's where I came from with this.
So I want to just set the stage a little bit with, you know, we talk a lot about personal growth, like it's this calm, tidy process. But the truth is, most of it starts in the mess, in the heat of the moment, when your kid's saying something, or let's say my spouse is saying something or does that thing, and suddenly there's this boom where you're reacting to them. You're reacting to something actually way older, and that's where the work begins. So a lot of people, when they look at things in terms of working on themselves, they're looking at it from the lens of where I should be, where I believe that I should be, almost like they're not accepting where they are right now. And there's a saying in the work that we say is, you are exactly where you need to be right in this moment. And the reactivity is coming usually from a place of, like I said, this old story that's surfacing, where it's like, I'm not agreeing with this moment. This is not how things are supposed to be. And what I'm really meeting is my own inability to face the moment. And why is that? Why am I not able to face this moment? What's coming up for me in this moment that's so hard that I need to react? Should we talk about the why people react? Is that where you want to go with this?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hooked at what you're saying already. But yeah, so why I was like there. I was trying to think of every moment I ever had. Yes, but why? Yeah, let's talk reactivity.
So a reaction and is, in general, like I said, it's because it's an old story. What does it mean it's an old story? It means that something is not resolved inside of me and I'm being triggered, right? This is a famous word in the work, is trigger. What's a trigger? A trigger is something like, if you look at a gun and you see this trigger on the gun, it's a very small piece and it's actually very easy to press, and you know, some big explosion comes out of it, which means that the trigger is actually one of the smallest parts of what's fueling the whole experience, because the ammo behind it is really everything that's like, okay, that's just the last step, and then boom, it happens. So trigger is something that someone revealed inside of me about myself, and I can't handle this. Well, why can't I handle this? Because what a trigger is it's and a response that is a reaction to the trigger is what's called active trauma. And active trauma means I'm replaying an old experience, I'm replaying an old story, and I don't have in that moment the ability to do it any other way. And that would be called a response flexibility. Response flexibility means if my kid, let's say, and I'll give a practical example, if my boys are fighting, because I have three boys in a row, and they're 11, he's almost 12, 11, 10, and 8, and they fight. They're just, that's what boys do. I came from a family of three boys where we were close together in age, and we just fight. That's what we do. That's how it goes. So the question is, as me watching this experience, can I handle it? Can I be with this? And I want to be able to show up to my boys and teach them not necessarily to fight and to learn how to get along. But if I can't teach them that, well, I might be quick to react and say, or start shouting at them, start yelling at them, start, you know, getting involved and removing them, or maybe start being physical. Who knows what it is? And something, a deep emotional, painful experience is happening inside of me, which is causing me to feel like there is no other way. I have to do it this way. I have to control. I have to stop this. I have to make things better, and so on and so forth. Response flexibility, which is the natural way of a person, is I don't actually have to stop this. I could actually become the observer of this. I could speak to them nicely. I could do something else. I could try something different. When we keep on reliving those same types of reactions, it's because something emotionally is unresolved inside of us that's causing it to come out in a dysfunctional way. Mm-hmm. So the reaction is something old that's coming out in the present moment that generally has nothing to do with the present moment. Does that make sense so far?
Yes, from the trigger.
Yeah, and it's from the trigger. And so if I'm looking at my scenario with my boys, And why I can't handle that? Well, I'm looking at them. Let's say I take them, and this was even last night, I took them to synagogue and went for the evening prayers, and they were fighting, and everyone, like, there was a bunch of men there, and we were all praying, and they were disrupting. And I felt the need inside of me that I got to control this. I got to put a stop to this. Why do I got to put a stop to this? Well, because they're disrupting. And if they disrupt, then people are going to look at me and they're going to blame me. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to blame me, well, then I'm going to feel that shame as a result of my boys not listening. So I don't want to feel that shame. I don't want to feel that embarrassment. So therefore, control. And I need them to listen to me, because if they don't listen to me, then it's a reflection on me that something's wrong with me. Maybe I'm not a good father, and I'm projecting that out to the world, and I'm taking responsibility over this. In order to not have to reflect that I might be not the greatest father, I have to control it, I have to stop it, I have to shut it down. But if I could, in that moment, stop everything and recognize that however I'm generating my life in that moment to try to shut them down and to stop them is really coming from something with inside me, then that pause, like you're saying, is I can make different choices. I could look at this different. I could become the thinker of my thoughts, because recognizing that, you know, kids are supposed to fight. Mm-hmm. Kids are supposed to disrupt. Kids are supposed to make trouble. Kids are supposed to be, quite frankly, kids. Mm-hmm. And why am I getting so invested in that? Because I'm believing that I'm not good enough in that moment, let's say, as a father. And I don't want that to reflect, because I don't want people to see that about me. And the reason I'm taking it so personally is because this idea of me not being good enough is actually not from this moment. It's from a story that I've been playing out my whole life. So it's a survival mode. Mm-hmm. And the survival mode says, shut it down quickly, because if you don't, they're going to see the truth of what you bury about yourself in that moment.
Hmm.
And now I project that onto my children. And what am I doing? I'm actually telling them, you need to not do this, because if you do this, you're bad. And then I'm actually, out of active trauma, giving over my trauma to my children to tell them, you're not behaving, therefore, you're not good enough.
Right. And then you feel the guilt, and then the whole cycle of now you feel terrible about yourself now, and then no one feels good about that stuff after. And I think that that's what you're saying the reactiveness is that moment. You know, it's that, like you said, it's you want to kind of like shut the shades, like shut the blinds, like fast, because you don't want to open that up in yourself to see that.
Reactivity is very fast because it's coming from a survival mode. The pause, well, that's where the soul gets to speak. Mm. It's the gap between I feel something and I act on it. And most people skip it because it's uncomfortable. But that discomfort, if I allow myself to feel that discomfort, that's actually the doorway. Mm. So for example, here's a simple practice. When you feel that surge, when your heart is racing, when there's heat in your chest, you put your hand on your chest, maybe your belly, wherever the tension is, because wherever tension is, that's what requires attention. Mm-hmm. I need to pay attention because my body's always communicating something to me, because that's where trauma lives. It lives in the body. So where there's tension is, you put your hand on it and you say, I'm right here. I don't need to run. I can be with this. And then you're not trying to change the feeling or the situation. You're meeting it. That's the shift. And it becomes a radical process, because most of us were never taught how to be with the intensity without exploding or shutting down. You know, that coping mm-hmm. mechanism, that flight or fight response. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is, when you're doing that, is you are doing that pause like we just spoke about. And what is that pause? In between something, like Viktor Frankl says, there's the stimulus, what happens to me, and then how I react to it. Right in between that, right in between that pause, in between what happens to me and how I react to it is called freedom. Hmm. That's where freedom lives.
That sounds exciting.
That's where all freedom lives. Yeah, because freedom says it doesn't have to be this way. I could choose something else. Mm-hmm. The power to choose something else means I'm in control, which means I have freedom here. There's many choices of how I could show up to this. I could start dancing. I could start laughing. I could start hugging my boys. I could start to do pretty much anything when you're free, right? Because that's what freedom is. Mm-hmm. But when I don't have freedom, it means I'm reliving an old reaction. And the worse it is and the worse damage it does, usually that's when people wake up. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm destroying my kids.
Right.
You see the damage on other people is when you realize, okay, I need to start working on this. I need to start doing something about this. This is not going to work anymore.
Right. I felt also your fight or flight moment when it comes to something that's helpful, meaning we also have reactivity. We have these survival skills for a reason. I'm thinking when a child's like crossing the street and they're not supposed to, that's where it's appropriate. It just hit me like that's reactiveness, fight or flight, like safety. And then that makes so much sense that you're putting yourself in that mode, safety, like alarm bells inappropriate way. And that's very helpful to me because I am good with like applying things in my brain, like if as long as they're put a certain way. And that makes a lot of sense where the alarm bells because a sense of safety, because you recognize this familiar feeling intuitively, even deep down. But what is so fascinating is that it could be so fast, but that's also what makes so much sense because it's safety. Because I'm literally thinking up all this reactive, like literally how fast it goes because I'm hearing you and I'm like, this is all great. But I'm thinking of an example where, or having, thank God, six, you know, over the years, I feel you get better in certain ways, meaning there has to be layers that pile up. You get a little better if you work on yourself to, okay, they spilled the orange juice. Okay, but now they put the plate on the floor. Okay, we're still cool, but like now they got to run to the bus, but like you're stepping in the juice and like she's running upstairs. Like she forgot her, you know, book and the other one forgot to sign the homework last night and the other one's leaving. And then you realize that your 9-year-old didn't unpack her freaking, knapsack that you asked her for a week and she's like the week, you know, she's not so strong and you see her struggling and then the bus is here. And then, so for me, it's the pile up. So at least I can say, I don't care about the juice anymore. You know, I also got a dog. So like, just make your problems easier and get a dog to clean some of this mess. But I'm saying I got good at like not fixing, you know, messes, letting kids be kids to an extent, but it's the pile up of the stress.
Well, I want to actually talk about that because you said a lot there, but yeah. One thing is like, we do need that survival mechanism around things that are going to threaten our survival. Like you're not going to walk out in the street when cars are coming because you need that certain instinct. That's normal, natural fear that relates to us staying alive. We need that. If we don't have fear inside of us, what ends up happening is we will risk our lives. And so that's a natural inborn quality. Whereas we have something like anxiety, which is a perceived threat that's not actually real because it's a distorted fear. Mm. And that came from somewhere. And I'll tell you a little bit about where that came from for most people is that we're wired as children. So we have two needs. I talk about this a lot and I've heard this a lot from different gurus out there, like Gabor Mate. You know, he's a world-renowned trauma therapist. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, they talk about this idea of we need this authenticity and attachment. Those are our two biggest needs growing up. And authenticity is I need to be myself. And attachment is I need to be in connection. Mm-hmm. Now, I need them both. As much. Like, it's not that I need one more than the other, but here's the interesting thing. When those two needs clash, for example, if you're running around as a kid and you're doing your thing and your father or mother doesn't like what you're doing and they start yelling at you or say, I'm going to hit you if you don't do that, if you do that again, then you will lose your authenticity in the moment and resort to connection, because connection is more of a survival need than authenticity. If you took a three-year-old child and you put them in the forest and you said, see you later, odds are they wouldn't survive. So we're wired that we need our primary caregivers to take care of us in order to survive. So we will lose our authenticity and we will stay connected as a result of me perceiving that I will die if I don't. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real thing. Now, when we lose our authenticity, what ends up happening is eventually it has to come out. Our authenticity has to come out. It's like a pressure cooker building up. You know, suppression can only last for so long. And if we suppress it for so many years, eventually what happens is depression. And then eventually what happens is I don't know who I am. And I'm like asking myself, who am I? And why am I asking myself that? Because in that moment, I had to disconnect from myself. I couldn't be in relationship with my authentic self. I had to be this people pleaser. I had to be this type of person that everyone likes in order to remain in connection. So life is going to trigger you to feel those feelings that you've been able to bury for so many years in order to reveal the authentic self. Because what's a trigger is a trigger is just an intense feeling. And the feelings are more authentically connected to who we are rather than the mind, which tells us who we think we are. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I just talk too esoterically, but I think you get what I'm saying.
I get exactly what you're saying. No, I feel like you're following my childhood to my 40s. I was like, that was me. I never heard it put like that. So I know both those people, but I'd never heard it phrased about the two needs. And that actually also makes me feel a lot better of understanding from a different perspective of what happened. Meaning it can be as simple as that to a level. Like when I was doing a lot of self-work over the 5 years, I was waiting for this like aha moment of like, oh my God, there's the trauma that was hidden in the closet like all these years, you know, that made a lot of things, like you said, like explode at some point, 35. And, you know, in a great way, there was no gigantic monster in the closet. There was exactly what you said, over 40 years of that and how much that can do. And I heard everything you said about suppressing the authenticity so to feel the connection. And then that's where I'm sure all that connection talk of attachment styles and things like that come up. Makes sense. But the need, then the authenticity screams out and they're like, you know, that's it. You can't deny me anymore. And then you got to reflect on everything. But I still keep coming back to the same point. How it's so interesting, and that's why I love the concept, like you, I'm also obsessed. I don't know the word, it's addiction, I'm obsessed with self-work, because I am just so like in this mindset right now with you of like, this is like a whole new way of thinking about the same thing I've been thinking about for 5 years. So it's like we're still in this realm. It's still the same pool. We're in the same pool, yet we like took a different lap or, you know, did a different stroke in the same pool. And I'm trying to see now, why does this still react this way with my kids? I'm aware of everything you're saying. You gave me a new perspective to see it. But how does it still happen in that moment? You know, how does it?
Because mindset is not enough. You know, the strongest force, and I always say to people, you don't know what you don't know. So if you don't know what it means not to react, then it's like, what does that even look like? It's a training. Imagine someone goes to the gym once, you think they're going to be ripped after one time going to the gym. I mean, you know, right, that it takes time, it takes consistency, it takes, you know, you want to get to that place of having, let's say, the six pack. Well, it takes a million steps to get there, and no one wants to work on those million steps that it takes to get there. They just want to be there. Mm-hmm. But here's the biggest mindset shift, is that your reaction isn't wrong. It's wise. It's not the enemy. It's a messenger, and you don't need to fight it. You don't need to, all you need to do is listen to it. And when you stop judging your reaction, you start getting curious about it. You shift from this shame to growth, from what's wrong with me to what is this trying to show me? And the one question, that one question asked from compassion can open up a whole new world. So if I'm judging myself because I'm reacting, well, there's this thing that says the strongest force in the human psyche is to remain consistent with how we define ourselves. Like I said, you don't know what you don't know. So if I believe about myself that I'm not good enough, or I'm a mess up, or I'm the person that always reacts, whatever belief system you want to place on that, then when you react, you're just looking at yourself and judging yourself again like you always do. So how are you going to get out of that loop? Well, I have to start looking at the reaction differently. I think that's one of the first steps, is looking at your reaction differently and be okay to learn something about yourself rather than saying, what is wrong with me? When a kid is acting up, what the parents do is say, what is wrong with you? Why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. Instead of being curious and saying, hey, what's going on for you? What's coming up for you? And being curious and being there for them rather than putting them down and needing them to be different. Because really, when I need them to be different, it's because I can't handle what they're doing.
Right.
And that's my deficiency. That's not theirs. Mm-hmm. Right. Before you even do that, though, and we didn't talk about this yet, but I think the first step that creates that opening between what happens to me and how I react is the breath.
Right.
The breath is the most important tool because we have access to it at any moment. And the breath says you now can start being conscious of yourself around what's happening, and you don't have to lose yourself. So you breathe because you're aware that there's something higher than me in this moment that's fueling this moment. Mm-hmm. Call it your creator. Call it your consciousness. Call it your ability to step out of the situation. You take one breath and now you can start looking at the situation. But when we're reacting, and you could try to see this the next time you react, because we're all going to react.
Probably going to happen in a few hours.
see what's happening. Are you breathing? Probably not.
No.
Breathing.
No, I could tell you right now, because there's so much tenseness that there's no way you can be breathing.
No chance. No chance. Exactly.
Would you say the pause is the breath? Is that synonymous with the breath? Because I do tap into the concept of the soul and how breath is the language of the soul, in a sense. And we skipped like 12 million steps for listeners, but just go with us here because we're in a short time of the podcast. But if breath is the language of the soul, is the pause the breath? Is the intent of the pause the breath?
It's a great question. I would say not always, because sometimes it is enough just to shift your mindset, or just to take your hand, like I said, and put it on your belly, put it on your heart, and then the breath can come after. It's definitely got to be a part of it, because I want to be able to be aware of myself. When you're not breathing consciously, you are not aware of yourself. You're just not. It's impossible.
Right.
Because that is our access to being able to see ourselves, being able to look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's coupled, but it's not always the first step. I believe the more you're breathing, and like I've told people, if you want to start calming down about what's happening, close your mouth and breathe through your nose, because your nose happens to have all these little nose hairs in it, and it filters the air the air that you're breathing in, and there's only 21% oxygen in the actual atmosphere. So your nose does a 30% better job to get accessing the oxygen. And they say that when you breathe through your nose in general, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is that calm. I can be calm right now. Mm. And the mouth, which is really meant for eating, in the end of the day, it's only a backup to breath, but there are a lot of mouth breathers out there, is that activates the sympathetic nervous system. You know, like a dog is like, when they want to eat, they're like, and you can see, because what's going on for them is they're feeling these intense emotions coming up around the food that's in front of them. And we want to calm that down. We want to be able to be relaxed in any given moment so we can appreciate the moment that's happening. When we're in that sympathetic nervous system, we've gone into a survival mechanism, a coping mechanism, intense feeling. So we're not aware of the moment rather than what's right in front of me right now, what's happening this moment. Mm-hmm. And I got to do something about it.
Well, in anger, react. You do feel that huffiness. So it makes sense. You do
anger's
feel
like
you're, yeah.
I'm stopping the breath.
Right.
And fear is like,
yeah.
And sadness is like, like the breath is not flowing. It's not coming through.
Yeah. Well, we could say so much more about that, about like the Yetzer Hara and like what you let in so it doesn't want you to breathe. Like, because you lose the holiness in that moment of unleashing. So like, this is a lot of layers here. I mean, it makes so much sense because it's so aggressive of a moment. And it brings up, like you said, a lot of shame and a lot of feelings in that moment. Like, it's just, it's such a spiral. It's such a tornado instinctively. It's would you say this is one of the hardest, like, did we get to one of the hardest concepts to work on?
Which is?
Reactivity and pausing in reaction. What?
I think that's part of the journey of a person's life is, you know, we come down here, if we're speaking Kabbalistically, what we're told is the soul's perfect. Mm-hmm. So what does it need this world for? The soul comes down here because there's some sort of advantage to being here. And what's the advantage of being here? So there's two souls, we're told. There's the godly soul, and then there's the animal soul. And the animal soul actually has an advantage over the godly soul, because if you imagine plowing a field, if you were to plow a field, you know, by picking one thing at a time yourself, it would take a very long time. And the animal, if you take a bull and you start plowing a field, you can get a lot more done, which means that the animal soul has a certain fuel that can build something even stronger, like more passion for God, more passion for connection. So we come down here to work with the animal parts of us. And the animal is focused on two things. As you know, animals, if you know an animal, instant gratification, the here and now, this moment right here, right now, and survival. And so if I can now work with the animal with its intensity around instant gratification, that's why addictions are so strong, because they feel like they need this, they need to be stuck on this, they need to do this, because that's a survival mechanism. It's so intense that it can get so bad and get so out of hand. And that's why you see that evil can get so out of hand here, is I need to tame the animal, work with it, and harness it and channel that energy, because on the other side of it is that intensity and fiery passion for doing good in this world and creating something very powerful. Mm. So working on those things, my reactions, which is the primary language of an animal, is emotions, harnesses a tremendous energy, which is why the soul actually comes down here, the godly soul. It wants to work with those things. It wants to work with those energies because it wants to bring back more intensity and fire and passion towards connection to God. That's everything.
Yeah, I was going to say that got me excited to react again or to be faced with the challenge to not react or manage my reactions, because everything has a sense of purpose, but when you make a click to understand how deep that level of purpose in all things, even reactions, like even these things that are not tangible but are everything, it gives, I feel like this is exactly what I needed to hear, this part of it in this moment. Lately, I've been very much about finding connection to understanding. I don't want to say understanding purpose, because we don't always know purpose, but I do find that we can find the purpose in everything. I do. I think there's purpose in everything, and that just made so much sense to feel. And is going to be very helpful for me in the moment. I think that's what I needed to know in the moment. Because whatever I was feeling or sensing about it, you know, you could, on a brain level, you could know you're not supposed to react like that to your kids, right? But that doesn't work ever. We know better, but it doesn't help transform our actions or our thoughts or our reactions. But on that soul level of understanding the purpose here is that your soul, this is actually exactly what you're here for. It's actually exactly what you're here for. This is what you're meant to face. And if you don't face it in this, you're going to face it in something else. And that's probably why you face it in everything. So that made so much sense.
How you do one thing is how you do everything, because you're the person behind it all.
Right.
And like I think, and you know, we talked about this before, but I think that, I mean, before this call, is really walking through a story in your life, maybe a trigger, I think would help really bring this to a real understanding of what we're talking about. But before that is like, let's say you were this kid and you were reacting and you were doing crazy stuff, because kids are more emotional beings. They only learn more self-awareness. They say, like, even, you know, according to the Torah, it says that a child becomes a bar bat mitzvah. Well, why at that specific age? Because that's when the soul fully, the godly soul fully comes down into the body, so to speak, and we now have access to it. Until then, we're just these emotional beings. We don't have the ability to start being aware of ourselves and aware of the world. We're just being programmed for all those years. So the first 12 years are really very important for a child's life in their programming. But as they're reacting, as they're doing crazy stuff, what did they really need? That they needed was a parent to understand them, to be there for them, and to help them through it. They didn't need a parent to tell them to stop doing that, stop doing this. And the more the kid doesn't listen, the more intensity the parent's going to come with. And so they shut it down until, guess what happens? They put them on meds because it's too much. And there's something wrong with the kid. And when the kid's taking the medication, well, guess what he's learning? There's something wrong with me, fundamentally. I'm not giving my opinion about medication. I'm just telling you a process. Now, if you're reacting, that means you're being like a kid in a certain sense. You look at yourself as a child. I'm reacting. Mm-hmm. In a certain sense, you are.
Yeah.
But what did your child need when he was reacting? Is the same thing that you need when you're reacting, is to be there for yourself, understand yourself, be okay with your reaction. Don't make yourself into the villain. I'm so bad. I'm so horrible. And work on whatever that thing is. Now, as an adult, we have permission to react because we're not perfect and we're not supposed to be perfect. But the question is, how do you show up to it after? When you've, quote unquote, reacted or damaged your kid, let's say, or maybe you actually did, how do you show up after that? Do you go to your kid and take responsibility and tell them it had nothing to do with them? And just literally share that it was all on you, and the kid can not have to be attached to thinking there's something wrong with it. Like, that's the unprogramming part of it, where I can come later and say, I'm just going to take responsibility. When you do that and you model that, you also show your kids how to do that and model that to themselves, to others. Like, it's like my older kids, I have a 21-year-old, a 19-year-old, they know how to do that, and they're helping do that for the other kids.
Right. I realize that's something I would have wanted when I was younger, so I do really try to do that. I kind of mess up sometimes when I still make it about them a little. Like, it sneaks in there. I'll be like, mommy, you know, is going to work on regulating her emotions. And I was just very, you know, so I put it on me. But then I say, but also, please empty your knapsack at school. Then I wouldn't have got like that. No, but I do try in some aspect, because I think any way you do that is still helpful, because you're regrouping after the fact and making them feel seen. And I do. So funny is, even my son actually wrote me notes for a long time. It was a great way to get out our feeling. They were hard to read, but it was a great way that opened the channel for communication. And now we don't really have to do it so much, because that opened it up. But one time when we had something and I tried to apologize, he would say, he's like, I know I'm allowed to have feelings. Like, I know these are my feelings, but, you know, like kind of like he knows. He's like, I don't need to tell him this. Like, I'm allowed to have my emotions. Like, I'm allowed to have my feelings. And it's just, it is really helpful to know that we can always still do something, you know, to help the situation.
Before you get into your personal story, I'll tell a personal story. It was very cool. It was a very cool lesson for me. 2 years ago, my son was six and I yelled at him. And, you know, we think it's not that bad because we're adults, but the way they're taking it is like, this is intense stuff. And so I felt like garbage after I did it, went into my room, and I started just like breathing into it, feeling what was going on. And I'm like, he really didn't deserve that. And I went back to him probably about 5-10 minutes later, and it was like bedtime. I was laying down with him. He even wants to lay down with me after I do stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
But so I'm laying down with him. I'm like, listen, that totally had nothing to do with you. And I was just overwhelmed and I really shouldn't have done that. I'm really sorry. And I love you. And he was taking it in and he's like, I really appreciate that. Thank you. I guess a 6 year old. And then he's like, and then you did this and then you do that. And all this other stuff was coming out. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, if I wouldn't have done that, where would all that voice of this other stuff, where would it have gone? It would just been stuffed inside, that authenticity being suppressed, not, and I was just like, thank you for telling me this. I appreciate you telling me your feelings, telling me what's going on. And you're totally on point.
Right.
Over the years, he's now 8 and whatever. He's, you know, when I take responsibility, because I still mess up.
Yeah, of course.
And without even me asking him, because I know the parents, we were like, I'm sorry that I did this, but you need to stop doing this. So now you're still telling him his behavior is not acceptable. Yeah. And there still is something wrong with it. Just let go of that. Mm-hmm. Because after that, the process becomes now that he's like, Abba, I'm sorry that I did this and I did that. I don't even have to ask him for it. I don't even have to tell him that. It just comes naturally because he's my son and he's taking everything from the way I do it. So if I'm showing up, he's going to start showing up. That's just, anyways, enough about me. If you could take something in your life that you got triggered with recently, like a real, and you can paint the scenario. Like if you could take something and you could feel like the trigger is still there. It's still like inside of you. It's something that you can feel right now in this moment. And maybe close your eyes for a second, take a deep breath and feel into some relationship in your life that's causing, you know, lack of freedom. Why I say lack of freedom? Remember, freedom is not to react. Freedom is to be able to have many choices, to be who I really want to be in this moment. Mm-hmm. And someone's not allowing me to be that. And that relationship where you feel lack of freedom or frustration or an intense emotion around, then just paint the picture for me and I can help you through it.
What's coming up for me is something that I still feel really bad about. So I think that's a good way to lead.
Let's
something
go.
I'm holding on to. I felt very bad mommy moment. It was a chaotic morning and one thing I asked my kids to do to help me help them is to give me their homework to sign the night before.
Oh yeah. The signing of the homework. Right. By the way, I'm going to be soon. You're going to see on my page. There's going to be a whole post on homework and what it does to our kids.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the signing of it, which I like to know a little bit, like when they're having a test, but I don't need to sign their homework every night. So they come in the morning to sign the homework as I'm packing the lunch and doing the breakfast and getting everyone out and then getting myself out. And when they come to sign the homework, oh, and then what did I see on the homework? Yes. Now, thank you for playing this out because I forgot these little details. I'm not such a psychopath, right? So what happened was on the homework I was signing was review for the test today. Did we review for the test? No, we did not review for the test. Why did we not review for the test? Because it was math and she's struggling in math. And at the time, I didn't even know the struggle. This opened me up to understanding there was a struggle because that means she hid the studying because it is such a struggle. So there was a good end result that I did consult with the school and we figured out extra help with her with math. But at the time, I saw it wasn't just signing the homework, so I could handle myself with that, because that happens most mornings, even though they know not to do that. It was that also realizing she didn't study for math. I think that was actually the biggest moment. And then the way I took it out had nothing to do with the math. It had to do with the fact that as we're in the bustle and she's pushing the folder into the bag, I realized the bag wasn't emptied for a week. You know how the kids pile up the bags over time, you know, and then you know what the heck's in there. It's like, and I can't even talk because I'm like that as an adult. So that's the funny part. I have garbage, I have like coffee things, and it's a mess. So the bag was not emptied, and I took it out on the bag, and I started quickly emptying her bag in a way that seemed very aggressive. Like it was not. It was because I was rushing for the bus and I was upset with the bag. And I'm sort of just like, it looked like if anything, I was throwing things out of the bag. I was like,
right there, right there, right there. You got it.
Yeah.
Close your eyes. There you go. You get it. You did it. You took the breath. Because mm-hmm. breath says I can pause. Remember, part of the pausing is on the trigger. We don't need to pause when things are flowing. Why would you want to pause when things are flowing? When things are flowing, things are good. You don't need to pause. You need to pause when you hit that emotional charged moment, because there's something there for you. So what do? We pause, we breathe in, okay, through our mouths. We feel it in our body. And you were emptying the bag pretty aggressively. And do you remember where you were doing it? It was in the kitchen.
That's what makes me want to cry right now, is because where I'm stuck right now is in that moment of emptying the bag. I know exactly where I was. It was like we have like kind of a sunroom in the front.
Stay there in the sunroom. You're emptying the bag. What color is the bag?
I'm thinking, which child? It's like a safari. You don't know, these are girls. Okay. It's like a safari silver and gold bag.
Okay, let's go. Breathe into that. Feel that. Because this is where the juice is. And what are you telling yourself as you're emptying that bag?
That if I empty the bag, everything would be better.
And what was so hard that the bag was full? What was coming up for you around the bag being full?
Well, the actual bag part was, I feel bad for her that she's carrying such a heavy bag.
No. Don't go there. Okay, let's just go to what are you feeling right now in this moment? As we're replaying this story for you,
and like everything is out of control.
Good, and good. But that's actually what you're thinking. What are you feeling when everything's out of control?
What's trying to come up for me now, which is like I can't panic.
Okay, so you have that panic. You're feeling panic, and what are you feeling underneath the panic? That everything's out of control. Things are going nuts.
I didn't do it. Like I didn't do it. I wasn't enough. I didn't get it all done.
That's what you tell yourself about yourself. But when you think that you're not enough and you're not getting it all done, how do you actually feel about you? It's already coming out. It's in your eyes. Yeah. What are you feeling?
Something wrong with me.
Well, that's what you think about yourself, but what you're actually feeling is sadness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So feelings are really simple. They're not these big, long sentences. They're just pointing you right there. We call that sadness. Yeah. Breathe into that. Feel that sadness for a moment. Imagine yourself looking at yourself, what you're doing. You're emptying that bag and you didn't get it all done. You're not good enough. You didn't make it enough. And you're going crazy about it, and you're triggered, and you're reacting, and your daughter's witnessing that version of you. And if you could, like, is that sadness familiar? Is that something like old, or is that just in that moment? Like, is that a familiar feeling? Like where everything's out of control and you're not enough?
Yeah, for sure. But what's making me really cry now is when I see their face when I'm like that.
Yeah. Yeah, good. And what in that moment, as you're feeling the sadness and you're looking at yourself and all that kind of stuff, what do you really want?
Instinctively, what am I saying? What do I want
what
to
do
say?
What do those tears want? That's what I'm asking.
Them to love me.
Yeah, them to love me. Well, what would it take for them to love you?
Just being, not actually doing anything like that.
Yeah. So would that be called acceptance?
Yeah.
So what you really want is acceptance? Now, I could take you all the way back to one of the sources of the stories, but I did it very quickly because you're already triggered.
Can I open my eyes?
You could.
I go there quick. I told you I'm an easy.
Yeah, target. No, but this is good. So I'm going to break it down for you. So in any, thank you.
I feel like I need a sip of water.
Thank you. Thank you for trusting and for just opening up and wanting to pay attention to a part of your life that needs attention. That's the triggers are the parts that need attention, because then we become better people. We expand, because if we keep on reacting the same way, we never grow. Because we're just predictable. Oh, that mom does this when, so I'm not even going to go there with her. And we want to change that because we want to expand the relationship and not to be limited in the relationship and the experiences that we're having. So if we grow as people, we work on the self, we're present to what we're going through, then we can expand our ability to be in relationship with others. People feel that, and then they expand, and you know, it's a more loving and open relationship, if that makes sense. What's happening for you is, and what's happening for all of us, is circumstances are revealing something about yourself. It's not what's happening to you. It's what is being revealed as a result of what's happening to you. So the data is, that's the first layer. There's four layers to this. The facts of the situation is that your daughter didn't empty her lunchbox and then you, or her bag, and then you saw it. And you opened it up. That's straight up facts. That's what's happening. Mm. Then there's what I'm thinking about what's happening. That's the second layer. What I'm thinking about what's happening is that, you know, the morning is rushed and things are crazy and I don't know, it's overwhelming and, you know, it's out of control and there's chaos and there's, and then if you break it down even more, you'll realize that when that's happening, you're judging yourself. Like, I'm not enough. Oh, I didn't get it done right. Oh, it's going to be craziness. I can't handle craziness. And my kid just needs to listen. And they're not doing their part. And it's too much for me to handle. I'm not enough. And we go there. And then there's this feeling, which is the next layer. That's all the thoughts and perceptions and judgments. And then there's the feelings, which the feeling, if you break it down to its core, it's sadness. So I'm feeling sad, and I'm feeling sad in this moment as all this is going on. And what do I really want? Because emotions are guiding us back to our true desires, our truth. What do I really want? Well, you said it. What did you say?
To feel loved.
To feel loved. To be accepted.
To be accepted. To be accepted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And that to be accepted is a little girl's desire that she had for so many years. And we don't know why yet. And we don't need to know why.
Maybe that part holds, too.
Yeah. But she holds that inside. And every now and then, circumstances triggers it to reveal it for her to work on it so she can come back to her own self-acceptance. Because the world is not going to accept you. The world's busy with themselves. Your mother, your father, life. Everyone's living from their variations of what they're going through and projecting it onto the world. Life is always happening from the inside out. So the only thing we have control over is how we are in relationship to ourselves. So when I work on a trigger, I can source it. I can say, oh, you know what? Your mother wasn't accepting of you. And that's why today you're struggling with that, because she placed that on you. You're unacceptable. And because your mother had such a weight of your life for at least for the first 7 years, is that's where all the programming, children are just learning about themselves through the outside world. They're not aware of themselves.
Right.
And so I hold these beliefs inside of me and trying to avoid them at all costs. But until we hit a trigger, which reveals to us where our work is. And it's scary to go into that because I'd have to admit to myself that I'm living life thinking that I'm not enough and I'm not acceptable for who I am. And I can't make mistakes and everything has to go smooth and everything has to be perfect because then I'm good. Mm-hmm. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. And so when I become aware of that, then there's a process of, now close your eyes for a second. And you can do it with your kids because your kids are mini versions of yourself. Imagine looking at those kids and their faces and how disappointed they were. And really, that's just you as a little girl. What does that little girl need to hear about herself when she's tantruming and going crazy? And like, what does she need?
I'm here for you.
Yeah, there you go. So now say it to your little girl who believes that she's not acceptable and everything has to be the right way and it can't be chaos and so on and so forth. Like, just say it to her. Say, I'm here for you.
I'm here for you.
How's that feel when you say that?
Comforting.
Yeah.
And you feel seen.
Yeah.
And that's enough to hear. That's enough to know.
Because that's all that everything else is like, just side business, side chatter, different ways of, people call it self-care, making the situation better. If you want to know your truth and where you're really at, it's not about changing the circumstance and it's not about changing the feeling. It's being with the feeling that I have in order to find my way back to a path of self-discovery, self-love. Because if you want to know what self-love really means, it's loving all the parts of yourself, especially those struggles, because the other parts don't need love. That's where you shine. So that's where you try to be all the time. But what's really going on is there's a part of you that you don't love, and that's why you get triggered, and that's why you react. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about everyone listening, everyone. Yeah. Including myself.
Yeah.
So self-love becomes how much can I go into those states of losing myself and come back to myself? Just like how could I lose myself to my kids and then come back to them later and own my peace and all of it.
I think what's so interesting is how you layered it down to the four layers. And I think I get stuck at that layer too of like analyzing from such a like philosophical perspective. And then you go to level three for you was the simplicity of the feeling. And I don't think I ever identify just like, that was very hard for me. You called out the feeling. That's a little like, I want to like massage that area for myself of like, huh, what are you feeling? Like name the feeling, the feelings chart. Like after the all of this, what does that still come down to as a feeling? And then from the feeling seem to open up pretty easily, you know.
Sadness generally comes from some sort of disappointment. Anger generally comes from thinking that you're not enough, you're insignificant. So the anger and the sadness are the distorted forms of what I'm really looking for. Sadness is looking for connection. Usually that's just the base, and anger is looking to be a somebody. And we have to know those things. Like I said, authenticity is being a somebody. Connection is what I need. Those are two things. When those get distorted, they come in these inappropriate way of feeling, which are anger and sadness. And we use it as a map backwards. We're looking back at ourselves. Because at the end of the day, the goal isn't to be untriggered. It's to be unshakable in the face of your triggers. But that takes honesty. It takes compassion. And it definitely takes practice. But the beauty is it's possible. And the moment you begin, everything just starts to shift. Because the next time you have that moment, you now have an extra length to your pause with your daughter because you spent time seeing yourself. So now you can see yourself more and how you're showing up.
Yes. Like I said, I'm oddly looking forward to the next reactive moment. Okay. How do you want to leave everybody after something like this? Do we just leave it here or do you feel like you want to?
Well, it's a bit of a cliffhanger. What I would say is everyone listening, whoever's listening, you're meant to be listening. Because something pulled you in this direction. So you need to hear something about yourself. And the one message that I'll say that's universal to everyone is start believing in the possibility of anything for yourself. And the worst thing we can do is close ourselves up to think that this is my life and help is out there. We have opportunities to become bigger and better versions of ourselves. Don't give up on yourself because the world gave up on you.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I have to like breathe after this session a little bit. In a great way. I love that. How can people follow you? I want to like pretend I'm a man for a minute and come on your workshops. So how can they go on your workshops? How can they follow you? How can they work with you?
Yeah, this is my least favorite part of this, but here we are. If you want to find me, we have a website, which is IamAnochi.com. And yeah, there's what we do over there. It's pretty elaborate. We're always updating our website. And we recently started with social media. It's at Finding Anochi, finding and then A-N-O-C-H-I. And yeah, just start listening to what we have to say. If you like this, just keep on listening, see what happens. You never know. Perspective, eventually it's like that. You keep on chipping away and eventually you take the message whenever you're ready to do that work on yourself.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this and for coming on. I'm glad to have met you.
Thank you for this opportunity. And everything happens for a reason. So this needed to happen. And God willing, the world's going to benefit from this. And thank you for Amen. Your vulnerability and your rawness and openness is unbelievable.
I know. Thank you. We'll talk again.
To be continued.
Don't forget to hit subscribe or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Nourished by Beth or listen on Spotify at the Secrets to Mindful Health podcast.